Have you ever wondered about life's biggest questions? Like, why am I here? What happens when we die? Or what else is out there? Well, we have, and we love to talk about it. And if you're listening, we think you probably do too. I'm Robin.
And I'm Karen. And we've spent our lives searching for those answers, and we're seekers just like you.
We'll be talking to some of the most fascinating spiritual teachers, healers, and scientists, and showing you how you can use some of their spiritual practices for yourself.
We'll also be sharing stories of other seekers to motivate you to live your fullest life.
And we'll be translating it all, so the spiritual stuff won't feel so out there.
So if you're curious, get ready to rediscover why we're here together.
I'm so excited for today's conversation because it is with my dear friend, Dr. Amy Robbins. Amy is a clinical psychologist, spiritual medium, and the host of the podcast, Life, Death, and the Space Between. Like us, Amy is a seeker.
Her own spiritual awakening opened her up to an entirely new way of looking at the world. She started to question everything. She brings her experience and knowledge as a psychologist, along with her knowing as a spiritual medium, to every interview. It's a rare combination. Her goal is to open people's minds and souls to live a more connected life.
Over the last several years, Amy has talked to renowned spiritual teachers and healers. Today, we're going to talk about Amy's personal experience, as well as what she's learned over her many spiritual conversations.
Hi, Amy.
So great to have you here.
So excited to be here.
I'm glad we're doing this finally.
Return the favor.
Hopefully this will lead to many more for both of us.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, so funny for me, it's like, I feel like I'm meeting a celebrity because I listen to your podcast every day commuting into the city, or every time you publish one, I would like be right on the next one. And so it's like, oh, now I get to see you for real in
Thank
person.
You. It's so weird to me when people recognize my voice because they've listened. It's just a very weird phenomenon.
Oh, it's like, and when I get to my desk and I don't get to the end of it, it's so frustrating. It's like, I don't want my day to start.
They're just so good, Amy. I mean, really. I want to talk about how that even came to be, but let's start by talking about your spiritual awakening. How did it all happen?
So if you've listened to my podcast, you might have heard this story already, but I come from a very conventional family. My grandfather was a pediatrician. My uncle's an orthopedic surgeon. My father's a dentist. Like, we are not seekers. That wasn't me. But looking back, I definitely was curious about this world. When I was 18 years old, my aunt passed away from juvenile onset diabetes. She was waiting for a pancreas and kidney transplant. And in order to get the transplant, she needed to undergo a bunch of tests to make sure that her body would be able to withstand the transplant. I was 18. I was a freshman in college at the time. Really, death hadn't kind of been in my wheelhouse. I lost some great grandparents, but never anybody that was super close. And my aunt was really like a second mother to me. When she went in for the pre kind of checkup, they found that she had experienced several heart attacks and that her heart would not withstand a transplant.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So they ended up going in to repair her heart. And when they went in to repair her heart, there was so much damage done, they couldn't restore her heart. And so she ended up dying on the table. And then I got the call that she had passed away. And we had the Shiva, and I went back to school 2 days later and kind of went on with my life, except that I didn't, because I had so much unresolved grief. I had sort of my own psychological story that I had told myself about her life and how my life was going to sort of parallel that, how similar they looked in so many ways. She was the oldest child of three. I'm the oldest of three. She had a younger sister and brother. I had a younger sister and brother. So psychologically, I had really identified with her and her journey, and also really feared that I would end up like her. So there was a lot of pieces there that I had to sort through. And I went to therapy and started to work through my grief. And now looking back, my first experience of what I now know to be called an after-death communication probably happened shortly after she passed away. And she showed up for me. She was in a red sweater. She was showing herself playing golf. And she said, tell your mom that she doesn't have to feel guilty about enjoying golf. Now, at the time, I had no idea. And I don't even think I've ever talked about this piece of it, because it really wasn't the communication that made me believe. At that point, I thought it was a dream. Never even said anything to anybody. But as I'm even speaking to you now, it is as clear. I can close my eyes and see what this looked like as clear as I'm talking to
you. I have the chills. Like, yeah, because I've never heard that one from you.
And my mom loves golf. And she really struggled after my aunt died playing golf, because she knew it was something that she enjoyed and felt a lot of guilt around my aunt not being here. It was survivor's guilt, right? Like, she couldn't be there to enjoy it. So that was the first experience. At the time, thought nothing of it.
So, well, and don't you think that a lot of people, and we'll, I know, talk more about all the different ways that you've now learned over your many conversations, how people get messages, right? And you yourself, which we'll get to. But the fact that that is like one of the first times that you can remember, and that can help other people who are listening or watching right now, you know, pay attention to those dream states. We actually were talking about that before we even got going today. There's something about that period.
Yeah, that sort of twilight. And it's usually in I call it like the twilight, almost like when you're get Novocaine for your teeth and you're in that kind of like, woo, state.
Her mind's most open, I think, right? Robin talks a lot about she's in the shower, she's blow drying her hair. You know, it's when your mind is just really at rest and is not trying to process too much, I think, is when that those messages can come. And Amy, it just makes me think for a moment, did you ever think that your aunt could have been one of your guides?
I'm convinced now that that is 100% the case. Like, she has in her life and in her death been probably my greatest teacher. But because of the psychological work that it forced me to do, and also the spiritual work that it forced me to do. And I think often we see those things as separate, but they're not. They're very much integrated, and you have to do both.
I love talking to you because you do. You bring all of that to the table. And as I've said to you for years, not many people do. So this is really exciting. So then tell us then what was the up, because I know that there was another very profound experience with her.
So right before my cousin, who her son was getting married, and she came to me, and very clearly I saw sort of two images. One was my mom was standing at the kitchen sink talking to her, and my aunt said to me, tell her it's okay. I will be at the wedding. She doesn't need to be upset. I will be there. And another was her telling me to tell her brother. She hears him when he speaks to her. And the image was of him pushing his son in a buggy, kind of running on a path. I woke up and I thought, what was that? And at the time I was in grad school, I must have been 24 at the time. So it was about 5 years after she died. And I went to one of my professors who was very, very grounded in psychological theory, but she also was very spiritual. So I knew that she would be sort of a safe person. And when I shared this with her, she said, oh my God, your aunt is coming to you. You need to open this up. You have a gift. And I was like, what is she talking about? She said she gave me the name of someone. She was like, you need to call them immediately. And I thought, well, I don't know. I told my mom what had happened. My mom said to me, oh my gosh, last night I was standing at the kitchen sink crying, talking to Linda, her sister, saying, I can't believe she's not going to be at this wedding. And we both started crying, and I said, she is going to be there, and called my uncle, same thing. That's always when I talk to her, is when I'm, you know, out walking or running. And I just thought, okay, there's more here. Went back to my professor, and she said, you need to talk to the spirits. They'll come to you. And
I love that professor.
I know, right? She is still my person that I go to when I have questions. And so I did. I asked my aunt to show us a sign. She loved Neil Diamond. My mom got into the car to pick up my brother, who was flying in for my cousin's wedding, turned on the radio, and sure enough, there was a Neil Diamond song on.
Love it.
But then still wasn't totally convinced. My grandfather passed away. It happened again. All around big events. It was a wedding again when he came to me and he gave me information and he knew a nickname that I didn't know. And then it started happening with patients. And then I sort of lost my mind, frankly, like not literally, but was overwhelmed with what to do. Things were happening in my house. Lights were like the entire house would zoom in and out of electricity. And I called a neighbor once and I was like, are you having a power outage? And she said, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. So in my mid 30s was when like the lights and there was really like just a lot of energy happening. And then I felt like I'd lost control. And at that point, went back to my professor and she said, you need to call one of her friends who is a medium and you need to start learning. I was nervous because I had a clinical practice at this point. Many of the people who refer to me are physicians. And to put yourself out there in a way where you're risking, I mean, I feared risking my clinical practice, which is my livelihood, to say that this has been my experience. This is what I'm starting to believe. This is in some way altering the way I think about the therapeutic work I do. So how I see people when they come into my office is not just through one lens, and it never was, but it was always through a psychological lens. It was not as much. And I, again, don't think they're separate, but I saw them as very separate. So I didn't think about, oh, is this person's symptoms possibly related to a past life? Is there stuck energy here? Can they move that? It was very much what happened in their early childhood and why are they behaving in this way now? And I think that it has allowed me to open up to be curious about all of these pieces when I'm treating someone.
So when you had that happen with like in your mid 30s and you talked to your professor, you then called the person that she recommended. And then what happened from there?
Because I can't do anything, Robin, you know this, without feeling like I have studied and researched and known it. And I spent, I don't know, 2 or 3 years with this woman and we practiced and I learned about mediumship. It's so funny because as I talk about it, I still am like, oh, I don't know.
You say that to me all the time. And I'm like, but you really have spent a lot of time.
Yeah, I have. It's only when I reflect on it that I'm like, I have spent a lot of time. She worked on teaching me and how you go into a meditation and how you protect yourself with boundaries and how you make sure that you are inviting in messages, that messages are not, you're not being bombarded all the time. And she really encouraged me to, again, put myself out there. I was doing this reading, and in the reading, I had said to this friend of mine who is a peripheral friend. I don't really know her. Her husband's father came through, so her father-in-law. And I had said, he's showing me a ring with a blue stone in it. And I had given her other messages, but that was this takeaway for her because she went home and told her husband. And he said, my dad didn't have jewelry. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't believe this, frankly. He then went home that weekend to his mother's house. And his mom walked in the room and said, I just found this ring of your dad. And it was the exact ring that I had described it. And he said he just about fell over. And this wasn't that long ago. I mean, this was maybe 5 years ago.
Right.
And so then I started my little internship where I said I would open myself up to read people for what was going to be a month. It ended up being, I think, 3 or 4. And I did about 30 or 40 readings. And then I decided it was not for me.
What was it? Was it the pressure of feeling like you had to get things right? And is that really what it came down to?
That was certainly part of it. And the other part of it was that I'm so used to being a therapist and being in it with people that it felt like it wasn't enough for me. Mm-hmm. For me, the real richness of having a reading is what you do after the reading. It's how you then take that information and integrate it into who you are, into what you believe, into how you see the world, into how you think about things. And so when I was reading, I wanted to do more. And so I just decided, I think, Robin, you know me well enough to know that part of it was like I didn't want to bring someone into a space where they would feel misled or that I wasn't accurate. Because when people are in their grief and they're desperately looking to connect, the last thing I want to be is to be viewed as a charlatan or someone who is inauthentic. And I know intention is really important, and that would never be my intention. I am not a natural medium in the way that some of the famous mediums out there describe their experience. For me, it really is a practice, and I don't practice enough.
It is a practice, and or you are truly just gifted, right? It is an innate gift. We all have it, but some people, I think, just like some people have a better voice than others. You know, some people are born with it being more heightened than others.
Mm-hmm. And that's not me. It didn't feel, talk about paying attention to your intuition, like that was where I wanted to be.
You're still utilizing that tool to help enhance the people that you work with, which in a way is your calling.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, just to help someone transform their life as a therapist is the most rewarding experience.
When I think about you and how fortunate your clients and patients are, because you bring all of this, you are one of the smartest people I know. You are. And so to have that, and because of what we said today, you are so good at whatever you put your mind to, right? To bring that with this intuitive part of you, I wish I had that in a therapist.
Amy, are most of your patients open to this kind of thinking?
Yeah, some are really curious and have opened up and have explored, you know, things that I haven't even explored yet. And other people are like very much kind of probably how I would have ended up had this not happened to me. There isn't that kind of quest to know what else there is. And that's fine with me. I stopped worrying that everybody needed to believe that this was true. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it. And if people don't believe it, or if people think I'm out there, I mean, I still have friends that don't know that I have a podcast.
That's part of your spiritual work, is to be able to let go of what other people think in this lifetime.
And that's a huge lesson for me. You know this, right?
I do. That
I'm always working on. And so for me to do the podcast was a huge step. One of my very dear friends is a physician who refers to me, and she knew about this. But another physician who refers to me, I was like, do I tell him? Do I not? What if one of his patients Googles me and they see that I have this podcast? And then they go back to him and say, do you know who you referred me to? Would I never get another referral from him? And so I sent him an email and I said, hey, just wanted to let you know, I have this podcast. Here's a little bit about it. I would love for you to listen. I don't know if he ever listened. I don't know that he cares, you know, that.
But he still sends you referrals.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Again, that's how you handle it, right? Like, you're so upfront, but then the letting go, right? But you're responsible. That's the word I was looking for. You're very responsible in the way that you go about life, but also in the way you even went about this, right? Because I know for you, for such a long time, you were worried about your practice because you love what you do. Mm-hmm. And so, but you wanted to pursue because you knew that there was this other piece of you that you needed to fulfill and explore, right? So I know I'm just so happy that you took the leap.
Well, and you were a big part in helping me do that.
As the viewer, as the listener here, what made you do it?
What did? Oh my God, Robin knows this because like I tried on so many, I was like a domino. Like I kept getting up and then like falling flat and like getting up and falling flat. Like I went down so many different paths. And Robin kept saying to me, yeah, but there's like so many other people out there that are doing this, or I don't really think that's the direction that you need to head. And I needed to do those things because I needed to find this way on my own. But I remember I bought this program because I was going to put all these courses online, and I had spent an embarrassing amount of money on a program. And so I remember waking up, we were on spring break, and this was this 8-week online course, and it was so aggressive and it was so not me. And I pushed through it because that's what I do. It's like I push through. And I remember my stomach being like riddled with anxiety. This was like 3 years ago. And my husband saying to me, what are you doing? This does not matter. You are so upset over something that you can let go of tomorrow. You're doing this to yourself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he is 100% right. And at that point, I said, you know what? This is not me. I am not just going to get online and sell some course that I put together if it's not really what I want to do, because I wanted my voice to be out in the world more. That was what this was about, is that I felt like I had more to say, and that a lot of what I said in my sessions, I wanted to say to more people. I wanted more people to hear and to learn and to understand and to start their own seeking. I committed in June, and then I released it in December of 2018, and it's been the best thing I've ever done.
Thank you.
I'm so happy you did it.
So how did you decide? Obviously, Robin helped. I'm sure you had lots of people giving you thoughts and ideas, but what got you to the life, death, and the space between? Like, how did you get to that?
Because the space between meant, to me, the space between life and death. It meant what happens after you die and that space. It's also, for me, my space, what felt like straddling these two worlds. I felt like I was in the space between. Super, super conventional. And like, I could probably go way out there. Like, Robin and I have had some of these talks about like...
We could go right there with you. If somebody, you know, who's listening now has not seen your podcast, how would you describe it, Amy?
I say we talk about life, death, consciousness, and what it all means.
You also are somewhat skeptical sometimes, even though you can do this yourself. You question different spiritual modalities. You question people, and are they real? Because I think what the three of us know is that not everybody is really good at maybe what they're saying they're good at. We are very careful, I believe, in vetting people and making sure that the people that we talk to are authentic. They are the real deal. You bring so much credibility, because I know that you're approaching it from this skepticism.
Yeah. And, you know, I want people, and I know that mediums often say this, they want people to be skeptics, right? Because really a skeptic's mind is a curious mind, and a curious mind is an open mind. And it's through that open-mindedness that you get information. No loved one is ever coming to you if you don't believe. I think Bill Phillips, I interviewed him, he's a medium, said, do you have to believe it to see it, or do you have to see it to believe it?
That's good.
That's a good point. So, and I love the fact that you're able to bring these people on your show so that we can get just a little bit of a taste of what they've written or what they've done and who they are as a person, so we can decide for ourselves if they're credible or if we feel comfortable believing what they believe.
And ultimately, when you're looking to heal, that's really, this is where I've kind of come a long way as a therapist, is like, that's really all that matters. Like, if you can heal, if you can find someone that you connect with, that you feel like can help you heal, you know, if they're not hurting you, who am I to say that what they're doing isn't right?
We've talked about this so many times. It's like, there's a lot of this that's all the same. It's just a different flavor, right? And I like vanilla and you like strawberry.
Yes. I would just love to know, what has been your most profound spiritual experience?
I lost a friend of mine's husband, who was also my friend, passed away a year ago. And one of the jokes at the funeral was about his dislike of mayonnaise. So the funeral, I think, was on a Thursday. And that Friday night, this other podcaster, terrible thanks for asking, has a podcast. She lost her husband to a brain tumor. My friend lost her husband to a brain tumor. My friend had been following this woman and loved her podcast. And that night, this woman was going to be in Chicago doing a book reading and a signing. And I went to the signing and recorded it. I wanted to see it, but I also recorded it for my friend. And I said to her husband, if you could give me like mayo, that would be amazing. I know that's a big ask. And on my way home, it was like 10:30 at night. I turned the corner in front of the apartment building that I used to live in, which the address was 444, which Robin and I have this 444 thing, was a car parked with the license plate mayo. And I thought, and it's in those moments where like that field in that moment, like such a profound experience. You cannot explain it. Like I had goosebumps. I drove by it. I had to go around again. I was nervous that it was going to like disappear, because sometimes I'll see things and they're so fleeting that by the time I look back, it's gone.
Oh, I remember you called me. I remember I was like, wait, she's calling a few times. Something must be wrong.
So. And it was late. I mean, it was just so, it was breathtaking. And it's those moments where I just think the universe is so amazing. And I think also if I do automatic writing sometimes, which I don't do often, but when I do and the messages come through.
How do you define it, Amy? Because it's a really good point. I think everybody has a different definition. How do you define it for yourself?
I define it as sort of soul knowing.
I love that.
I love that too. And you just write whatever comes.
Yeah, like I was kept feeling like I need to sit and meditate on this notion of truth. It was mm-hmm. interesting that you said that earlier, Robin, something about truth. I keep hearing like, sit down and write, sit down and write. And so this morning I finally did. It's not from here. It's from here.
Well, and then also I know that you've had a few other types of spiritual experiences. Have any of those, whether it was a past life regression or an astrology reading, have those helped you, would you say?
I feel like they've more validated than helped. And, you know, I've wondered why that is. I just have done a lot of inner work, 17 years of therapy. I think that I know myself pretty well. And so if someone said something to me that was like so mind blowing, it would actually maybe scare me a little bit because I'm like, how have I missed that?
I know for sure it can be extremely validating. And for other people who haven't done as much work, it can actually really help them because they feel so lost, right? So I get what you're saying.
And I think it can maybe be a springboard to therapy or to that inner work because if they say something that really does resonate, then you can go do the work. I think that the work has to be the psychological and the spiritual together. Yeah. I don't know that one is the answer over the other.
What's one spiritual modality that you've learned about that you most look forward to trying?
So I did this episode with Raymond Moody. And if people don't know Raymond Moody, he is the researcher on near-death and shared death experiences. He's probably in his 80s now, late 70s, but he talks about these psychomantiums. They're called the oracles of the dead, where they set up this space. It's called mirror gazing. And you walk in and you sit and you gaze into this mirror and your loved one shows up.
Oh, I remember this episode and I called Robin that night. I'm like, I have got to try that. It sounds weird when you're telling it, right? But when you listen to the science, there's science behind it.
I'm kind of curious why it's not more of a modality if it works.
Right.
I think it could allow for people to have the experience of connecting.
Well, when you're talking though about the mirror gazing, I'm just like picturing like you're in a room with all these different mirrors and you're staring at yourself. Is that the deal?
Yeah, I think so. You're in a room with not all these different mirrors, just one mirror.
Oh, it's just one mirror. Okay.
Yeah. And you're kind of looking into it and it's dark and you're just sort of letting your eyes kind of settle.
Got it.
In that, I guess you start to see your love. You invite them to come forward and you start to see them.
Wow. Now I'm going to have to look that up.
Well, it's a little Harry Potter, isn't it?
That is exactly what made me think of it.
Yeah. I mean, so that has to be a tradition that came from somewhere, just like crystal balls, same idea, look into something and see. So, well, if you do it, let us know. Cause I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. What would you say has been one of the more memorable conversations or stories that you've done?
I feel bad picking one.
I mean, I know.
So hard.
It doesn't have to be the most. It's just one of them because I know you've had many.
I interviewed a near-death experiencer who was struck by lightning. He's a doctor. The way that he described the experience of getting struck and then watching like his wife or his mother-in-law, when he got struck, like run down the stairs through him. And he, like how he described everything that he experienced when he was dead was unbelievable. It was just so profound to hear. A lot of near-death experiencers have kind of talked about like they're floating or, you know, suddenly they find themselves in this beautiful space where they feel filled with love. But the way that he described it just seemed like, holy shit, like, oh my God.
That one stayed with me too.
Yep. And then honestly, just people's stories. Like, everybody has a story.
Yeah, everybody.
And that's amazing.
One of my favorite episodes was a very sciencey one. It was about the woman who wrote a book about, I guess her father had passed away, and she was sitting with him as he was dying and started to realize that he was speaking to people in the room. And that led her on that quest of really experiencing death with a lot of other people and writing about how they all were starting to say the same things. There were people that were coming into the room and who they recognized and the looks on their faces. And for those of us who have people dying around us right now, it can give you so much hope that there is more out there. And having somebody who was, I think, is she a linguist maybe? Somebody who really understand language doing that work, it just gives us a depth of our life that we would never have if we didn't look for it or just stop.
If I had a loved one in the hospital dying right now and I could not visit them, that would be awful and I would be traumatized and I would be going to therapy to talk about that. But I would also know and trust that hopefully my grandma, my grandfather, my aunt, you know, whomever would be their guides would be waiting for them to help them cross over, then it shifts the way you feel about those situations.
That is so important. I think that is really one of the main reasons all of us are doing what we're doing, is so that people hopefully can wake up to this idea of energy all around us and that we never really die and that we are never alone. We are never alone. I repeat that, I don't know how many times during a day, actually, to different people, because it's very easy in our humanness to get caught up, especially now. You know, certain people are feeling more isolated than they have ever felt before. Or if you're in a hospital alone, and I know I had a family member who experienced that. But my knowing, which is, I know our knowing, is that you are never alone. And that if everybody could understand that, we would have so much less fear.
Often we think about just our loved ones, but we also, you talk about this, we have our spirit guides, you know, yes. And I think that as we become more conscious, we're more able to access our guides as well.
Right. Well, and I think that's actually really important, because there are people who haven't lost loved ones or good friends, which is great for them in this human life right now. That's their journey. But we all have guides. We don't know them in our humanness. We don't know their names. We don't have to.
But you can. I've done meditations to meet my guides. In my between life regression, I met my guide.
Karen wants to do that.
Because if we could remember our intention for why we came, it would be so helpful. That loss of memory that we have. I know that's the journey. I know that's the purpose for us being here. I think we always kind of deeply know. I think it's always there. It's just we need to use the tools to wake that back up so we can remember.
Well, I also think it's validation.
And yes.
I think that's the other part, is I do think we do know.
We know.
Sometimes we just need someone else to say it outside of us.
Right. Which was exactly my point when you ask the question, like, what's been all, it's just validated that I'm not supposed to be an accountant.
Through all of your conversations and your own experiences, what would be one thing you'd tell people watching or listening to try or to do if they are feeling lost or feeling hopeless?
Go to therapy.
You're going to say that.
I thought about this. And I thought about, what is it? Is it, you know, mediumship? Is it energy healing? Is it past life regression? And I think that no matter which of those, any modality you choose, it always comes back to knowing yourself, being able to talk through what is going on in your own mind, to say it out loud, to have someone else bear witness to it, and to have someone else help you sort through it and help you understand it is the best gift you can give yourself.
Therapy does help you get to know yourself. And if that's a new concept for you and you're feeling like lost, that is a perfect way to start. It's starting to take that time, starting to uncover, starting to remember, Karen, as you were saying, it's like that remembering. And when you start to open that up, there's a lot that comes with it. That's our work. We're here to work on our souls, right? Whatever this plan that we made for ourselves before we came here, that's the work. And it's not always easy.
No,
it's not easy.
That the other part is the fear of just not being perfect, the fear of that we're not as good as everybody else is, right? And I think that that keeps people away from therapy because they don't want to put a voice to that feeling of not being good enough. I'm guilty of that. I've always avoided therapy for that reason. That's what goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning. It's like everybody needs to find the tools that are comfortable for them.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I didn't talk about as much in the beginning was that I was really riddled with anxiety, not only as a result of my aunt's death, I think that was a big piece of it, but just because I so identified with her life in so many ways, and it made me really anxious. And I thought I was going to die like she was, and I thought my life was going to end like hers did. And I had to process that in therapy, and her visits and spiritual guidance helped me let go of that. So the two together, that's that in between. It was like the two pieces together for me were the perfect lock and key. I trust that I'm going to be okay.
Therapy is a tool. And I think what you've uncovered, and I know what we're uncovering, is there's so many tools.
The podcast is a tool.
The podcast is totally a tool. Yeah.
I know. I'm so excited for all that's still to come.
Thank you for doing it. And you did take a leap of your own faith.
You trusted yourself and you got out of your own way.
Which for me is a big lesson.
I love you.
Thank you guys for, knowing each other and bringing this conversation to all of us.
Our knowing each other was definitely
planned. Yes, it was planned. That's for sure. Yeah. And it was the right time too. We met at the right time to help one another. And I think what we all are doing together is we're going to help lots of other people realize why they're here and more conversations and more working together. And you can find Amy's podcast, Life, Death, and the Space Between, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So go subscribe and download them now.
Please.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Bye. Hey.